Hello and welcome. I'm Jacinta Bolsenbrook from the Grower Group Alliance, your host for Making the Call, Farming Decisions in WA podcast. Now, it's a mini-series exploring how Western Australian grain growers are making smarter, more informed nitrogen decisions on farm. This series is brought to you by the Grower Group Alliance and eight West Australian Grower Group project partners. Each episode, we'll be heading out to a different region to hear from local growers about how they're balancing risk, reward, and investigate how they're making nitrogen efficiency and usage decisions in their farming systems. This podcast is part of the RiskWise National Risk Management Initiative, a $30 million GRDC investment helping growers navigate key decisions around nitrogen management, sowing times, and machinery investment. So, join us as we unpack the thinking behind making those tough calls and the people making them.
Hello and welcome to the podcast series. Today with myself, Connor Baker, research agronomist with the Coalition Farm Improvement Group. And today we're going to be interviewing Ashley Jacobs. Ashley, how you going?
Yeah, good thanks, Connor. Yourself?
Yeah, not too bad. So Ash, tell us a bit about yourself and your farming background.
Okay, yeah, I've been back on the farm now for, will be 11 years. We farm northeast of Corrigin on the Corrigin and Bruce Rock Shire boundary. We have total farm area of 4,500 hectares. We are mostly cropping with still a few sheep and yeah.
Yep. So what brought you to go into farming? Like, was it always a passion for you going back to the family farm, or was there other thoughts early on?
Always been interested in farming. I guess I like the sort of challenge farming brings. Every year is different. I guess you always strive for perfection, but what works one year might not work the next. So
yep.
Yeah, it's, I find how variable it can be. Every year you're always learning something new.
Yeah. Yeah, for myself, it's that endless game of addiction of trying to learn how to better yourself. Each year throws a different challenge. Each soil type brings a different, you know, challenge to that to think about and how to do better and how we can be better. So, yeah, it's a fun game, isn't it? So how are things looking on your farm this year compared to previous years?
Yeah, so this year for us is quite dry winter rainfall. We're currently between about 220 to 250 mils for the year, anywhere between about 190 to 220 growing season rainfall. Been a very dry winter for us. Had quite a bit of late March, early April rain, which helped us get majority of our crops up at the correct time. But yeah, winter's been very dry for us. We haven't really had many daily rainfall totals over 10 mil, but yeah, we're probably looking at a slightly below average season this year.
Yeah, so frustrating considering the previous years, but the way of how farming works is always the year that changes it and gives you another challenge, doesn't it? So
yeah, well, you got to have bad years to have good years. It's just the nature of farming. Probably where we farm, you know, probably right on the edge of the low medium rainfall zone. I've been work on about 320 mils a year and about 210 growing season rainfall. So yeah, once it starts to drop below 200, I guess your crop yields can really, really fall off the cliff.
Yeah. So with that, what would you sort of say you like a 5 in 10 growing, like get good years, or 6 out of 10, what sort of would you see like a good profit, I guess, in your area?
Yeah, 5 or 6.
Yep.
Definitely. Yeah, would be good profits. And then probably, yeah, 4 out of 10 is a bit of a survival
yep.
type of thing. So just limit losses. We tend to know from the first 1 or 2 winter rains that come through, you know, whether, you know, if the fronts come through and hit, then you know you're sort of on for a decent year. And if they don't, it's easy just to sort of, I guess, shut up shop within reason and hold and wait.
Yep.
Wait what the season brings.
Yeah.
Sort of described as like your soil type and things like that that you're farming at the moment.
Yeah. So we have, I guess I tend to divide our farm up into two farms. One, I guess we'll call our home farm, which is on the eastern edge. Drier, a lot of heavier soils, mostly sort of a loam to a clay, not much, barely any sand at all. Probably the lightest it gets is a sandy loam. Then my other farm, which is a little bit further west and south, that sort of is more, you'd call more, I guess, a good sort of sandy gravel loam in general. Not much true beach sand, but does get some sandier loam and probably a little bit of clay loam. It's quite a good soil type in most years, and obviously a little bit more, I guess you'd say, reliable. I guess you'd say less variable on the home farm.
Yeah. Because you got a fair bit of heavy clay as well, don't you? Or
yes. Yeah, the home farm, significant amounts of what you call clay.
Yep.
Mostly grey clay. It's a red as well. But yeah, generally you'd call it most of our sort of a sodic grey clay type of soil with, and then some is not sodic, that's quite cracking. So
yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good soil in good years. Can be quite challenging in poor years, but I think we've started to get it really figured out.
Yeah.
These past 5 years or so.
Yep.
How to make it work for us.
Yeah. It's definitely a soil type I prefer to have compared to my poor beach sand I try and farm. So so on that, obviously you've come back, you've had probably a bit more of a traditional, I guess, mixed sheep program for a long time. Your father ran previously, and you've come home and you're running a lot more of full crop now, or have you still got a couple of sheep running around?
Yeah, so we still have sheep. This is the last year of livestock. We're seeing there's, I guess, having livestock on heavier soils does cause a lot of issues. A lot of compaction tend to make the soil, I guess would say, that it sort of concretes up, internal concrete, and yeah, areas that have had minimal sheep or no sheep on them, the difference is unbelievable. So yeah, we sort of, I guess when I come back, we're sort of 60-40. Now we're probably up to about 90-10.
Yep.
But we do sort of fallow a fair bit now, chemical fallow. We're at dry seasons. We are, now that the sheep are in their last year, that area pretty well is going to move into chemical fallow area. So we'll probably still be an 80-20, 75-25 crop to sort of fallow ratio, just to ease that burden of varying seasons.
Yep. So as overall now, where you're looking to move to, what sort of cropping, so what sort of percentage, wheat, barley, canola, chemical fallow, how are you sort of modifying that program to work as a system?
Yeah, so used to be, I guess when I come back, like most people, was majority wheat, but now sort of canola, the gains in canola and barley, sort of pushing them hectares more and more. So pretty well from now on, like the last four or five years, the profitability has been quite equal between wheat, barley, and canola. So now we're about equal each. So, you know, it's pretty well equal hectares of each, of just say generally around 1,000 for each. And then we have lupins on top of that, which is 300-400 or so hectares, give or take. And yes, those amounts can sort of vary. We can play the season. Yep. So we do have a good wet April. We can easily just up the canola hectares by, you know, 200-300 hectares and drop back wheat or barley hectares. So we can really play and manage our farm now.
So a lot of this podcast obviously is about nitrogen and how you make your nitrogen decisions and risk-wise as a whole. So for yourself, you've taken part in the risk-wise nitrogen trials early on. You did some stubble crunching as well as adding in extra nitrogen on top in the 2023 year, which was quite a dry year for you guys personally. Did you see any results that year that's helped change how you go about your nitrogen decisions now?
Yeah, so we'll probably probably wasn't the best year for the trial, because from 2023, I think we only had about 250 odd mil for the year, and 120 mil of that came in a 3-week period in from late March to early April. And then it was 120 mils for the rest of winter. So sort of those nitrogen effects weren't fully, I guess, seen or used up because we're limited by moisture. So from memory, it was only about 50 to 100 kilos difference between all three treatments, which I guess probably played more into the fact that that was a poor, I guess, a dry season. So you're not putting the crop under much nitrogen stress or sort of, yeah, around that path.
Yeah. So, because overall the results were showed similar. There's a little bit of an uptick on the extra nitrogen years, but not a lot. So
yeah, it was definitely a little bit of a yield gain, but probably not an economic yield gain by any means.
Yep.
So yeah, and I guess that just comes to relate to our seasons, like when it rains, you got to go. When it doesn't, you got to hold up and wait. So
obviously, at the moment, currently, with the wheat, barley, and canola, you've got a little bit. You've got to replace back into the soil again following those years, but also having that lupin and sheep in there, you've obviously got a bit of mineralization of nitrogen as well. How are you going about making those nitrogen decisions? How do you generally work out how much up front with your nitrogen? How do you apply that nitrogen? So, yeah, what are you sort of looking at as a whole? Going into like a barley or a wheat or a canola, what sort of units are you thinking in? How you go about putting them in?
Yeah. So our process now, we started last year, was we tend to soil test all the paddocks coming out of a pasture or after lupins. So we know what the levels of nitrogen are there to begin with, before we start a wheat, barley, canola into that phase. So then it gives us, and even after a fallow as well, because we can find on some of the heavier soil types, you can get very significant mineralization, like upwards of, 50, 60 parts per million. You're looking at 75 to 100 kilos of nitrogen there.
Wow.
Yep. So on certain soil types, on some it might only be 20.
Yeah,
depending on how heavy the soil is. So, yeah, that sort of gives us an idea to look at before we even put the crop in. And then at seeding time, we tend to be quite front heavy with nitrogen, as sort of legumes have not a majority of the farming system anymore. We really need to front load crops. So we're at about sort of 20 units goes down the tube with the seed. And then we spray on about another 30 units with the pre-emergent. So we tend to be at about 50 units is sort of our base level for our whole farm. That's over everything. And then we work from there. So then afterwards, then we sort of play the season. So if it's dry, that's it. Which this year, most of our home farm, that was it.
Yep.
There was no more nitrogen put on. So it seems like the right decision now. Yeah, now the lighter soil farm, we did get another top up. So now we've come to realise that I can put in this safety net of 50 units and not have to come back at sort of three to five early tillering to have to juice up the crop again. So it gives us a good bit of time. I guess time is on our side, so we're not rushing back to get nitrogen on, because it's all done in one pass. So,
and time is the key, especially when you put a large program like yourself. And because is it just yourself and your father, your worker, or?
Yeah, we do have a casual worker sometimes, but, during seeding, it's mostly me and my dad. So, yeah, it's quite long hours in between ourselves. So the aim is to sort of really make operations as efficient as possible and minimize passes over the paddock. So that's our main aim.
And then I guess also, with that early nitrogen, just getting that plant up crop competition, and also just the fact that early leaf energy just to get through those dry periods at the end of the year is probably a large part for you as well.
Yeah, I find it definitely helps. Even in, say, like a pasture or after lupins, you know, where there could be significant amounts of nitrogen there, you know, you could be looking at, you know, there could be 80 kilos in the top 10 centimeters of nitrogen there that's plant available. But we always still find you need that nitrogen with the seed to give that immediate jump, because it takes time for it to find the nitrogen throughout the soil. So it tends, the nitrogen, I guess, organic N tends to be spread reasonably even throughout the soil. Whereas if we have this little heavy band of nitrogen net seed row, the crop can just hook into that straight away and get going. Yeah. We find that even, you know, infinite amount of nitrogen, just having that little heavy band just gives that crop that jump then to find all the organic nitrogen.
And then, so also, Ash, you've obviously got a strip and disc system, which the listeners probably don't know about. It's not something that's used quite widely across WA as of yet. There's a few early adapters of it, but how have you found the strip and disc system? Has that helped anything, or has you found it more challenging with the nitrogen? A lot of people find the obviously stubble nitrogen tie up. What have your biggest, you know, findings been with that?
Yeah, so I guess with our disc seeder and stripper front, there's a lot more stubble, taller stubble, a lot more stubble stays on the surface. Stubble tends to hang around for longer. Like if you have you can find 3-year-old stubble still on the surface, slowly breaking down. So that build up, I guess, can lead to a lot of tie up, which we are seeing, especially this year or any time after a very good and above average, really good season. That season afterwards, we find we can get a lot of tie up early on in the season, like sort of quite significant this year. So if you can see in barley or anything that's sort of after a cereal crop, the tie up early on is significant. So how we're sort of going about that going forward is we're probably going to start banding or getting more nitrogen in the ground. So sort of that sprayer pass early on for pre-emergent, I reckon we're losing significant amounts of nitrogen because we're literally just coating UAN all over the stubble. So that we're probably going to move forward to higher banding rates. So potentially be 100 litres or so at sowing, probably mid-row banded, just to get it in the ground away from the stubble. Yep. Make it just improve your efficiency because nitrogen is not cheap. So you want to try and get your best bang for your buck out of it.
So with like the wheat, barley and canola, a lot of people are starting to push canola rates a lot higher. Do you push your canola more than your wheat and barley, or you keep that same across the board?
Tends to be with canola, we can play the season quite well. So tend to do that same thing around that 50. And then if it is looking good, we'll put more on. It tends to be like with a Prosaro spray, we could be at sort of at that sort of 20% flowering. 50 units comfortably gets you through to there, and then you tend to need a lot of nitrogen once the crop starts stem elongation and flowering. So we will then, I guess, there's a decision made whether you go hard or back it right off. That's sort of how we play the season, because canola can be quite variable in production. And our farm has some very, very good canola crops and had some very, very poor ones. So, yeah, we could be upwards. That Prosaro spray could be another 100 litres of UAN in a whack, or it could be zero. Yeah. That just, or it varies between farms, like this year where some got a big whacker, some got absolutely nothing. So
you're quite variable in the way that, obviously, I guess 22 and 24 were quite good years, so you lent to put a bit more on, whereas this year and 23 were quite dry, so you shut the gates. You've been quite variable with how you've been able to make those decisions.
Yeah, that's sort of, I guess it's become, sort of learnt over the last sort of 6-7 years. You can sort of learn without, having so much variability, you really have to manage what you do. So, yeah, we sort of, and that's why we went down this path of putting so much on so early. So then, because that's the minimum rate I'm sort of comfortable with on our farm, and that's up from there. So, yeah. So it gives me enough sort of, I guess, confidence that I'm not causing any severe nitrogen deficiency earlier on that can horribly destroy yield. And then I know sort of, yeah, coming in late, I can whack it on. That's probably where our management, nitrogen management comes in, because we can, especially with some of the heavy soils, it's very, very easy to blow a crop up.
Yes.
So our September rainfall average is stupidly low, that you produce a lot of biomass and no grain, and we're grain farmers. So grain is the key.
Grain's key. Grain's the king. So do you have an advisor that you talk to about any of these decisions, or is it a lot of the times that yourself?
Yeah, we do use a private agronomist. We more go back and forth with ideas over that, but generally the decision is made down to me. Some of it, as I've said before, is science-based through what is there in the ground and this and that. But then, we do some nitrogen-rich strips in paddocks just to see what's going on. And a lot of it's down to, I guess, looking through crops and judging what rainfall has been, what the season prospects look like. I guess yield potential is the main thing we work off each year. Like generally, yeah, like in 23, things were looking good. So it was an easy decision in 2024 just to go and put on an extra, 20, 25 units, because you had confidence in the season. There was moisture in the ground. All the crops were up at the right time. That's what, I guess, all those decisions are sort of made in my head to come up with a yield potential figure. So if all our crops germinate in June, I'm probably not putting on any more nitrogen, because I know coming into the back end of September, they're going to run out of moisture or get heat shock.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's very, very rare that we'll get a 50 mil September that stays mild.
Yeah.
I think it's probably happened once or twice in the past 15 years. We generally work on maybe only 20 mil, 15, 20 mil, if you're lucky. When our crops are using probably 60, 65, 70 mils of rain in September and you're only getting that. So, yeah, you have to rely on a wet August to get you through.
Is there any other sort of lessons that you've learned along the way that have been huge ones for you personally? Like, it might have been a mistake, something's happened, or you've learned from your father, like going through your farm years. What have been some of those bigger lessons where, something's gone wrong and you've gone, oh, this has been a bit of an aha moment?
Yeah, it's probably been adaptability to seasons. You can't just go all out at the start every year. Like, it could end badly, like significant losses. Learned more that we need to sort of, what we are going to put on nitrogen-wise, you're better off having it on as early as possible for our situation. So, yeah, as I said, with that 50-unit mark, there's no point putting on nothing and then wait to Z31 or stem elevation start putting on. Damage is being done. There's just not enough nitrogen in the soil to support that level of growth without causing any sort of yield potential damage. So, yeah, that's been the main one. Now that sort of took us years to figure out, where sort of we only used to be that 40-50 sort of through the sprayer, and then you'd come back and you have to put more on, and then something can happen, and it can cause a lot of problems. So that's been the big one, I guess. What you're going to put it on early, and then sort of then remain adaptable. I guess everyone has a different sort of confidence level depending on where they farm, what their rainfall is, what their risk appetite is. But that's just, sort of a number we've sort of come up with that works for us.
Yeah. And then so going forward, and with like nitrogen research going forward from here, what would you like to see? And do you have any visions yourself of what you think would be useful in the future?
Yeah, I guess I mentioned on before about starting to band more nitrogen. Think our nitrogen efficiency here is quite poor. I think we see other areas of the world that ban most of their nitrogen. We sort of have our limitations having such large farms and banding nitrogen, and can slow down seeding, slow down operations. So we tend to just broadcast it everywhere. I think if we do or are entering a world of high nitrogen prices. And if they do stay up high, we really need to start looking at really focusing on that efficiency number. A lot less losses is key. We want it to all go into crop growth, which, to be honest, a lot of it gets used up before it even hits a crop or gets lost or in any sort of way. So I guess that's my main growth, or I guess where I'm sort of trying to head to, make everything as efficient as possible.
Yeah. So do you think, I guess, going to like GRDC or something like that's where you'd want them to put a lot of funding, is just getting that nitrogen use efficiency where we know as growers going forward that we can be up there as high as possible without losing anything?
Yeah. Well, I guess, yeah, that should be the main aim. I know it has been looked at a bit, but yeah, really need to dial it in because I reckon there's a lot of losses happening around there. Yeah, whether it's from stubble tie-up, volatilization, leaching, quite rare for my area, but there probably are areas that have significant leaching issues.
Yep.
I know there are sort of stabilizers out there now, but probably, yeah, a lot of ways to solve it is to get your nitrogen in the ground, at least an inch or two in the ground, and you'll stop most, if not all, stubble type losses and volatilization losses.
Because I guess at the moment, the biggest on-topic brand at the moment is nitrogen banking. And I guess with your sort of soil types, are you seeing a bit of that nitrogen banking happening at your farm?
We do see it some years where, say, I've worked out, okay, there was this much in the soil. This is how much nitrogen we put on. Say there's 50 kilos in the soil. We've put on, let's say for figure sake, so put on 100, there's 150 kilos there. But then the crop's gone 3 tons, so effectively used up 75, so 75 left over. You do see residual effects.
Yeah.
Leaching losses are probably non-existent. We don't really get any leaching of nitrogen, especially on heavy soil. 325 mil rainfall, it's just not going to move. And we did see that, like, when I first come home, I think it was 2017, we had a spreader that lost one of its side curtains and urea started pouring out, so we went flat out. That little, well, killed the crop the first year, because obviously it was too nitrogen, but next 8 years, you see these little humps, 8 years. So that nitrogen does not move, and we had some wetter years where you'd have, you know, 150 mil of summer rain and that nitrogen's still there. So, yeah, but nitrogen banking for us, I guess it's more or less we monitor it, because, you know, if you monitor it multiple years, you can actually get reasonably close to what soil nitrogen level there is.
Yeah.
So we can sort of go, yeah, like if you just monitor how much you put on, how much you use up year after year after year, you can get surprisingly close. Surprisingly. So
is there any other take-home points, I guess, like economically or for yourself, like agronomically, like, is there anything that you'd probably want to pass on to anyone else other than the early upfront 50 units there is the big ones? Is there anything else that you'd probably share that I haven't touched on so far?
Yeah, I guess for our area, putting too much on too early can definitely, I guess, hay a crop off, blow it up. Probably has to be managed through nitrogen rate or seed or a seed rate management for us. Like on sandy soils, it's quite difficult to do, but on heavy soils, it's very easy to do. So, yeah, we sort of, you do either way. You keep the seed rate up and back off the nitrogen, or you back the seed rate off and keep the nitrogen up. Because even in 2024, like some barley, we blew up. Even though it's quite a good year, it still yielded well, but once it lodged, it's game over.
Yeah.
Probably lost a ton and a half from lodging.
Yep.
Which is one of the first times we ever lost yield from lodging in about 10 years. Well, actually got lodging in the first place.
Yeah.
So, yeah, do have to be careful. I guess we do see a lot of people, yeah, do that and then wait till Z31 and then load it up. It's probably one of the other things, yeah, where we sort of need to learn to manage our nitrogen a bit better now that a lot higher rates are going on.
Yeah.
When to put it on, how to put it on. You can't just go and put on 120 units in early tillering.
Yeah.
And expect that, well, I guess this is where we've got some to learn from the real high rainfall growers. managing nitrogen, managing biomass to get good yield, and good grain quality.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think for myself, South Town and know some farmers west of town, they are putting a lot of applications on constantly throughout the year, and that's upfront, you know, early tillering, and then later again, just as, you know, we're going into that stem elongation and flowering. So spacing that out, giving that plant the energy that's required through those important times is something we need to take away to get that efficiency correct. So I know for ourselves, especially, and it does come down to that soil type, we've got a lot of lighter soils and we need to feed it a little bit more often. Otherwise, it's not there. Whereas your clay types, you've got a little bit more room to move, I feel.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you do see it. Like, we've got paddocks which are half-half where you might have a poor wadule gravel and then a very good deep red clay, and just the differences. Like, even just the mineralized nitrogen, you know, you're getting three, four times as much mineralized N every year on that than wadule soil.
Yeah.
You know, and you're looking at that, there's, you know, there's upwards of, you know, could be anywhere from 20 to 60 units more. There's your 1 to 2 ton of crop right there.
Yep.
So does have to be managed more. Soils have to be managed differently. But yeah, whatever works for whatever soil type. Like, we tend to, most of our paddocks are pretty consistent. So we do, I guess, you manage them paddock to paddock.
Well, I think overall, I'd say this has been excellent so far to carry out our discussions on nitrogen ash, and it's been an absolute privilege to have you in here. So thanks for coming in and sharing your experiences so far with your farm, and yeah, hopefully everyone takes a bit away from this. So thanks, Ash.
Yep, no worries. Thank you, Connor.
You've just been listening to Making the Call, Farming Decisions in WA. This podcast is part of the RiskWise National Risk Management Initiative, a $30 million GRDC investment helping growers navigate key decisions around nitrogen management, sowing times, and machinery investment. The Grower Group Alliance Project webpage features more information, news, resources, and updates about RiskWise and the 8 Grower Group project partners involved. Simply visit the GGA website at www.ggA.org.au. Head to the Activities tab and find RiskWise listed under GGA Projects.